Blog Talk Radio.
And good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of Shut Up and Listen. I'm your host, The Voice, broadcasting live out of New York City on this day, October 7th. October 7th, listen to me. Boy, what am I thinking about when I'm saying that? That just shows how daylight savings time messes me and my thought process up, at least the first few weeks it does. But anyway, broadcasting live out of New York City on this March the 7th, 2015 at 5 p.m., a time that should, in all actuality, be 4 p.m. But once again, we have that, what one broadcaster called exercise in insanity, daylight savings time, which is something that I still feel that we can do without at this point in life. You understand now? And it throws people off. Well, me, it certainly throws off. I won't deny that one bit. And I'll talk about that. But first off, anybody who happens to be listening by chance, by accident, by web browser, whatever way, you can call in live at area code 714-816-4604. I'll say that one more time. 714-816-4604. Now, but daylight savings time. It's a love-hate relationship with most of the population. I've even looked it up online to see how many other countries observe it and what countries don't. I'm trying to think what states. There are some states that wouldn't observe daylight savings time. And when I was a youth, growing up in the South, we didn't observe it. I remember thinking at one point that if you were in New York, which is where my mother was living after a time in my youth, you know, and I would talk to people here on the phone when I was a kid in North Carolina, and it would be an hour ahead. And I thought it was just a different time zone altogether. But it turns out they had what was called daylight savings time here. And then after the fall, at some point in the fall, close to winter, but not as close to winter as we are with it now, it would go back to the regular time zone. Now it's permeating most of the United States, and a lot of people like it. And they give it to say, oh, we have more sunshine. Listen, folks, even with the regular time zone, you have enough sunshine. In the summer, you're going to have a lot of sunshine with or without daylight savings time. Look at your watch and do a comparison. And when 7 o'clock comes around, look at how light it's going to be as opposed to daylight savings time. That is to say, 8 o'clock in the summer and without daylight savings time, regular standard time, it would be 7 o'clock. But look at how light it would still be. So you would say, hey, that's okay. You don't need it anymore. It was started by Ben Franklin to give farmers more time to work on their crops in the springtime. And this way they would be more ready for harvest time in the fall and all of that and yada, yada, yada. This was the story of how daylight savings initially started. And everywhere I look at it, it turns out that this is what it was. Then the industrialists got a hold of the idea for more production. And then later, ecologists and all of that got a hold to it even further and decided that it's a good energy saver. And people wouldn't use electricity as much while there's still daylight saving, while there's still daylight hours. The thing about it is, boys and girls, no conclusive proof has come up to say that you're still saving energy. No real conclusive proof to justify it. But what they do have some proof on is the fact that because a lot of people's body clock gets altered drastically, especially those people who adhere to strict time practices, to strict time habits, i.e. going to work, anything of that sort where time is pertinent to them. There has been a noticeable spike in heart attacks during that first week of the spring ahead time. Because people just can't, just because you're going to be getting up an hour early or doing things an hour or two earlier, that doesn't mean your body is going to shut down on cue. That's like, well, I'm going to go to bed now because I got to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning or some crazy stuff like that. And your body, if for the last few months or even years you've been going to bed at a certain time, you're not going to be acclimated to it. And they have came up with proof saying that people do experience, or records do indicate, that first week an uptick in heart attacks and in some cases mild strokes, in some cases maybe major strokes, because of the time change. So that in itself is justification as to why the thing is not needed anymore. We can do without daylight savings time, in my opinion. Now, I know there are people who will give me arguments just as well about it, about why it should stay around, and it's good. And, you know, as the summer comes along and as the season progresses, I actually forget that we're actually working on, you know, daylight savings time. I, too, like most humans, about most social changes or, you know, most social alterations of any sort, eventually get used to it, you know, in due time. We all acquiesce, we all accept, even when we don't want to, even if we don't want to admit it, we all still pretty much fall in lockstep with what's going on in society, in our culture, in our lives. We may make noise about it. Some people make more noise than others. But by and large, we all still wind up accepting. Well, I, for one, don't like daylight savings time, but I can't change time. I can speak out against it. And if I ever see organizations that ask people to sign petitions, which I looked for on the Internet last year but didn't see that, I saw lots of articles about likes and dislikes and people's response to it, but I didn't see anything inviting people to join an organization or sign a petition to shut down daylight savings time. If and when I do, I will certainly join it. I will certainly sign in on it. Absolutely. And even though it mattered more when I was working daytime and had to, you know, go to work an hour earlier, it mattered more. It mattered more. And it mattered more in the sense that I lost a weekend, an hour after the weekend, which always mattered more. And, you know, we ultimately get used to it. We ultimately accept it. It doesn't matter. I was just one of those people, am just one of those people who just don't, in spite of the complaints and whatever maybe feeble complaints I have for the justification of shutting it down, I just don't see where it's a necessary tradition, you would call it, necessary social change every year now. I just don't see where it's necessary to have it. But here we are, and here we are shortly after 5, which should be shortly after 4, and I haven't changed my personal watches. Of course, the cable boxes and all that changed for you. What with the microchips inside, pre-programmed for all of this for years, for decades to come, that's taken care of. I will eventually get around to changing my watches and putting them back. And, of course, the good part about it is we actually do get that hour back when you fall back. And for me, that's probably one of the greatest weekends of the year, knowing that other hour is going to be tacked on. I love that. I love that. That at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, again, it's actually 1 o'clock, and you get up the next day, whatever time, and the hour is back again, and I am absolutely in love with that. I look forward to that each and every year. It's one of those weekends I am constantly in love with. And looky, while I'm talking, my internet connection has gone belly up here. I don't know why. I don't know how. Even though my screen still says, you know, one thing about it, when you work with a router, it depends on where you are. You may or may not have connections. See, I'm back on again. I'm back in place again just by simply relocating my laptop, what I'm broadcasting on. Yeah, so sometimes no matter how powerful a router is, if you just divert a little bit away, the router just simply says, oh, don't leave me. Don't leave me. I don't want to be alone here. You know, it just turns out that way, but I'm just wandering on. Now, as I said in my typed intro to the show, there's other less important stuff. This is what I like to refer to it as, since we had talked about that. And one of those things is the media. And I'm back to that again. How the media does contribute to fanfare or outrage and works hard to, in its own self, divide the races. By the way things are broadcast, by the way that things are written in the papers, or magazines, the way they're presented, you know, on your local and national news, naturally, be that radio, as I said, broadcast, be that radio or TV, it fans flames in a lot of ways, you know, when you mention over and over again, say, for instance, a teen or a youth or a man or any person, man, well, is shot by a white police officer. And quite often I've heard it reiterated where it's not necessary to do that, where it's not necessary to reiterate the fact that the shooting officer was white, or where it's not necessary to keep showing the people in the paper who are, in fact, the people who work people up into a fit of agitation, who work people up into a fit of potential violence, and in some cases outright violence. And the media feeds on that too much, in my opinion. Too much, in my opinion. And then I start to see the hate letters, because the people who don't understand and who are looking for reasons to complain and reasons to hate, looking for their reasons to come to the surface, these are the letters I can read in the paper. Because like I had said before, I am pretty much a devout letter reader. And that is simply because I like to see how people think, you know. Now, I don't give a lot of stock in people writing comments on the internet, because you never know what's real there. You never know if it's some hacker in some far off country just writing things. And, you know, it's just trying to work people up into a frenzy on their own. I don't know about that, but what I do know is that when people bother to write letters and weigh in on their opinion, it gives me a good idea of how some people are feeling out here and looking for ways to justify that feeling. And these are the people that are brought to surface when the media goes out of its way. And I'm rummaging through something else I want to talk about here later, but just not right now at this moment. Now, I have to observe one thing that we know very little about, and this is one of the reasons I say we are, in fact, influenced by the media. I once heard it years ago on TV, on one of the discussion shows. I forgot, News Hour, McNeil Era, remember that, or somebody. And they were talking about not only does the media give you the news, the media tells you how to think about what you get. And it tells you pretty much what to ignore. And people do fall into that without realizing. Now, case in point, in L.A., Los Angeles, last week, there was a fatal shooting of a homeless man. Now, that sounds drastic enough, as it does, right? In some cases, that can sound infuriating enough, right? Now, you factor in the fact that he was a black homeless man, and that's enough to make people say, Now, wait a damn minute. Now, right, why would that happen? Why would anybody shoot this homeless man? What's going on here? Now, of course, he's homeless, and it's a possibility. He could have been extremely volatile. He could have been very violent. Now, I worked in the shelter system at one point here in New York City, and I know the kind of people you can have in the homeless shelters, especially those who have come out of prison without any halfway house, or people who have come out of mental institutions. You get all that in the shelter system. You can get, in fact, some very dangerous people in the homeless shelter system here. You might think of the old classic hobo types in there and all, and, you know, people of that sort, you know, the old buddy, can you spare dime kind of people and all that, but not necessarily so. But you have sometimes a hardcore institutionalized people in that system. And I've seen how violent some of the people in the shelter systems can get. But anyway, back to the Los Angeles situation. As I said, it was a black homeless guy fatally shot by a police officer in Los Angeles. And the story was, and we don't hear a lot of this story, and I'm going to get to that, you know, after I make the statement, after I say what I'm saying, I'm leading up to it. The story was that he went after the cop's gun. It was videotaped, and we don't see a lot of that either, which, once again, I'll get to. He went after the cop's gun, ostensibly, supposedly. He went after his gun, and you could hear what sounded like a police officer say, "He's going for my gun, he's going for my gun," something of that sort. I've only heard it once. Instead of hearing, as in the Eric Garner case in Staten Island here in New York, over and over again, "I can't breathe," which has become a phrase that is becoming synonymous with, well, police violence, you know, here. I'm starting to wonder if anybody is ever going to be able to use the word again, even in a movie or anything of that sort, without offending somebody or something. But anyway, the cop was saying, or at least supposedly was the cop saying, "He's going for my gun." And the cop shoots him dead. And it turns out, get the media to point out, the cop who shot him was also a black man. So a black man shot the homeless black guy. And as a result, we're not hearing a lot of media coverage about this. Why? Because it's not something that will draw the reading, the news reading public, and the broadcast watching and radio listening, news radio listening public, or anybody else. It's not something that would draw their attention right now. So this is what we have now. You have not heard very much about this shooting, this fatal shooting in L.A., because the cop was black. So the media has pretty much, downplayed it. You're not hearing a lot about it, because I guarantee you, and even as a black man, I can say, I guarantee you, had that been a white cop that shot this black homeless man, right now, right this minute, you could go on TV and find no less than 3 TV stations where this situation would be discussed. I don't care if it's news clippings of it again. I don't care if it's news real footage of it again. I don't care if it's people sitting down and discussing it. I don't care if it's on talk radio. There's no way you can convince me now that had the cop been white and he shot this black homeless man, that there would not be a lot more media fanfare about it now. And a lot of our people out here in the public, a lot of people out here in the public, I should say, would be weighing in on it, not to mention all the people who we are supposedly led to believe are the people who speak for us, you know, and we all know who they are. They would be weighing in on it. Some of them would be flocking to L.A. right now to speak about it, and talk about marches or outrage and the usual, no justice, no peace. And that, I mean, you know, let's face it, these situations do exist. Bigoted situations do exist. I mean, they've already said that about Ferguson, Missouri. Yeah, it exists. And to play it up makes it even worse for the public and public opinion. See, I'm of the fact that right now, the people who make the most noise about these situations are the people who are in our older generations and all. And those are the people who, well, for lack of a better explanation, those are the people who still have sometimes a 70s sensibility. You know, I'm always critical about where we were in the 70s, even though I, too, am something of a veteran of the 70s. But, you know, the people who still talk about where we are, how we are, and, of course, now when that is spread to younger generations, then that feeling gets perpetuated over and over and over again. But what I'm saying now is that for a while it looked like the younger generations, I always call it the moral generation and all of that, the racial differences, while you acknowledge there's differences and you say that, you know, you acknowledge that there are cultural differences, or at least they acknowledge there could be cultural differences, they seem to have let race matter considerably less than older generations, and especially our generation, the demographic that I'm in. And the people I hear the most noise about, that make the most noise out of my demographic, are the people who have experienced less bigotry than generations before them. My mother once said, years ago, anybody born after 1954 really don't have a whole lot of valid complaints about the racial situations out here. I don't know the significance of 1954, but I could certainly see the point that she was making. And most of the people, a lot of the complainers in my generation, are the people who went to college, they studied black stuff and everything, and all of a sudden now, these are the people who are the authority on what it is to be black. So now, here we are with the situation in California, and if there is a lot of talk about what happens, it will come from a lot of us in this generational demographic I'm talking about. But the thing is, there is not a lot of talk coming from it. And the thing about it is, it's because there's not enough fodder there to work people up into the what they would feel justifiable outrage. And this is how the media works, boys and girls. This is how the media works. And if you don't hear a lot about this, and if you sit down to wonder, there's the rub, I should say, of why we're not hearing that much about this situation. And it's a shame. So when you read the papers, you sit down, or when you look at the news, you sit down, and a lot of people say, oh, well, I don't read the paper. But you're getting your news somewhere. You're getting your news from somewhere. You don't read the paper, but you go on the Internet. And if the papers are full of bull crap, then why can't some of the stuff you get on the Internet be full of bull crap? Somebody, if they're listening out here, might say I'm full of bull crap. But that's okay. This is just talking about things I see. And the things I see sometimes are not expressed or articulated as eloquently as I feel. But that's the way I'm looking at things quite often out here. Now, the next thing I was talking about, or was intending to talk about, was the planet. And I don't know, once again, how many people read the papers, or once again, or went on the Internet, which is where I first saw this. You know, NASA has their satellite that, you know, goes up there, the Dawn spacecraft, and they found the planet, a dwarf planet. I don't know what constitutes a dwarf planet. I mean, I know it's still big and all, but I don't know what size constitutes it being described as being dwarf. But anyhow, I saw it on the internet too. And they found on, I saw the pictures on the internet too. What they found was a couple of lights that seemed to be beaming up from the planet. And these didn't seem like reflections. And Friday, you know, there were two lights, one fairly larger and looked like two almost spotlights or beacons of some sort. And they didn't know. And Friday, the Dawn spacecraft was supposed to enter the orbit of the planet. The planet is called Ceres, I guess. So who knows? It might be pronounced Latin Ceres, C-E-R-E-S. Anyway, Friday was supposed to enter the orbit of that planet and take a closer look and photograph or whatever it does there of what this was. I haven't heard anything about, as of today or yesterday, what the Dawn spacecraft might have found there, you know. But this is something that's very, very interesting because you've never seen anything there. I mean, you saw lines on Mars, they had said, that looked like they might have canals, that looked like they might have been made by something intelligent. Now you have two lights on this thing, or maybe they found something and they're not giving it to us. Who knows? Maybe right back to in one of these Malaysia Flight 370 things that I like to keep coming back to from time to time. After all, whatever the heck happened to that flight? I mean, come on, it's been a year now. But anyway, this is what we got. This is what the spacecraft was supposed to do. And we haven't heard anything. I don't know, maybe NASA found something and they have to have figure out a way to bring it to the public. Or maybe they found something and they're not ever going to bring it out to the public. But in which case, they should not have mentioned the fact that they have a planet with two lights emanating from it. I'm curious. I, for one, am certainly curious. And if anybody wants to know, they can go on the internet and look that up. Especially if you don't read the papers or whatever. But, you know, none of that, like I say, is as important as daylight savings time, right? Who cares? I mean, you know, let's talk about important stuff like daylight savings time, the Kardashians, and all the things that really matter here. And finally, as we wind down here, big article in New York City. A lot of the rats in the subway contain fleas that have the same virus that spreads the bubonic plague. That's not good. That's not good at all. In fact, when I first read it, I found it more than a little bit disturbing, in fact. I mean, this is something that we haven't had for centuries, bubonic plague. Now, I saw something in the paper, in the letters, which, as I say, and this woman sounded very authoritative about it. This lady who wrote the letter, she said, the reason why it spread in England so bad was, during that time, the mayor of London, if I remember correctly, she had written that the mayor of London, which was at the 16th century, 17th century, at some point, thought that the plague came from cats. So he had virtually all of the cats eliminated in England, which left the rats with free reign to roam about the city everywhere, spreading the plague. Now, we found out that in neighborhoods where you have a big preponderance of certain cats and all of that, rats are kept at minimum. So, frankly, I think, to wrap this thing up before I get off, frankly, I think we ought to bring more cats in the city then. That might be a good deterrent if, in fact, these rats do have a plague-carrying flea, or a flea-carrying plague viruses. Anyway, if I learn more, these 30 minutes go by quickly, and a lot of people will probably say they go by quickly, mercifully, or maybe not quick enough, depending on your opinion. Anyway, you've been listening to Shut Up and Listen. Thanks for listening. I'll do this again. There's no scheduled time, as I always say. I just wing these things whenever the thought or the mood hits me to do this. But I'll be back again, and you can always find me online on SUAL, Shut Up and Listen, or Shut Up and Listen 2, it's called. I want to thank all listeners, and until the next time, I bid you a good day, and I bid you a good day in spite of daylight savings time.